Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Thanks for listening to Dusty and Cam podcast, brought to you on the fan by your local Les Schwab Tire Center. Doing the right thing since 1952.
Would I rather be feared or loved? Easy, both. I want people to be afraid of how much they love me.
This is Dusty and Cam in the morning.
Come on, guys. Early worm gets the worm.
Another worm? Like, are they friends?
This early bird gets the worm.
With Dusty Hera.
That kid probably needs to be punched in the face.
In an ideal world, I would have all 10 fingers on my left hand, so my right hand could just be a fist for punching.
And NFL veteran Cam Cleland.
Who wants some man meat?
I do. I want some man meat.
No, I'm not a meat gazer.
Dusty and Cam on 1080.
He's like the Lone Ranger and I'm like Tonto. And it's not like there was the Lone Ranger and Tonto and Bonto.
The Fan.
All right, Jimmy Butler, malcontent or competitor?
Hands down, best open we got.
That one? Yes. Tonto and Bonto. And Cam, not a meat gazer.
Man meat.
I was watching The Office last night.
Where were you?
Yeah.
I told you that my oldest is going to be Dwight Schrute.
Dwight Schrute for Halloween,
which
is
fantastic.
Wait till
I get a picture of this. It is...
I was watching the episode where he has a dinner party with Michael Scott has a dinner party with Jim and Pam.
That might be the most uncomfortable episode of the series.
Very much so. But he had a line that I could not stop laughing at when he's tasting the wine and he goes, it's kind of got an oaky afterbirth to it. And everybody just kind of looks around like,
Meanwhile, because of his sensitive teeth, he's dipping his steak into his wine.
Into his wine.
Got an oaky afterbirth.
There we go.
Anyways, The Office. Hey, got a couple of things we want to tell you about. Tonight is Ducks Trivia Night, 6 p.m. out at Bleachers, right in Cedar Mill off Saltzman in Beaverton. Swag will be out there. I think it starts at 6 o'clock, but you want to get there a little bit earlier because it's going to probably get pretty packed because Ducks Trivia Night, among Ducks swag, gear, everything, will be a pair of tickets on the line for Oregon, Washington.
Oh.
Huh?
How about that?
So if you're looking to get in the
door,
it's
a hot ticket
for free, but you don't have a lot of cash in your pocket, head on out tonight. At Bleacher Sports Bar, 575 Northwest Saltzman Road in Beaverton, 6 o'clock. Swag will be hosting. It's all brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, and Swag is going to be there. Bleachers. More details at 1080thefan.com. You can win tickets there. Also, tomorrow from 3 to 5 down at Power Kia in Salem. So if you're down in the Salem area, I will be out at Power Kia in Salem where we will have the fan wheel with duck swag and prizes available. And also we will be giving away a pair of tickets to Ducks Huskies. So if you're not in the Beaverton area, another chance to win tomorrow with me down at Salem at Power Kia from 3 to 5. So we got plenty of opportunities to get people in the door. Biggest game we've had in this area in a long time.
Not that big a deal.
Oh, you think?
No. Just another game.
Yeah. Oh, you keep telling yourself that.
No, I'm just channeling my inner Coach Peterson.
That's a load of garbage.
Just another game. Big game. Just another game.
No, not really. You know what it is right now? 7:06.
What's hot?
Spoken.
What's hot and why is it cool?
They're cool because they're hot.
Hot and cool with Dusty and Cam. Your morning dose of positivity ripped from the headlines.
Great story. Compelling and rich.
Brought to you on the fan by Area Heating and Cooling. With more than 30 trucks in Portland and Vancouver, you won't have to wait on Area.
Actually, yes, just as uncomfortable as the dinner party episode of The Office is Michael Scott's tots where he promised college tuition.
Oh, yeah, that was really bad.
Cringe-worthy episode.
Feeling hot, hot, hot.
As expected, former Lake Oswego product Jake Dukart will join Oregon State's baseball team after quitting the football team a couple of weeks ago. Mm. He is a dynamite prospect. He was considered a better baseball prospect than a football prospect out of high school. Tried the quarterback thing. Now going to join the baseball team.
All right. Find your rhythm. Go with the passion.
You know, it's not necessarily a bad thing to leave the one-win football program for the defending national champion baseball program.
I think I know what I would pick. Golf.
Ah, there it is.
That's the coolest story I've ever heard in my entire life.
Did you hear the story about Lenny Dykstra?
Oh, yeah. I follow him on Twitter. He's a interesting follow.
He was indicted on 3 counts in a New Jersey court yesterday. Possession of cocaine, possession of meth, and making terroristic threats to an Uber driver.
Yeah.
This happened a few months back.
It did.
Nails could be going to prison again.
Again, and if you see pictures of him, his Twitter feed was full of him doing, I don't know what he's doing. He was laying carpet
at
3 in the morning.
That's a sad story. This is a sad tale of a man that is gone. Because what was it? Insider training?
Trading. Yeah.
That he went
lost all his money investing. Now he's a home repair guy. I don't know what he is. It's really weird. It's very strange.
Man. That is a sad tale of a man that was a hell of a baseball player at one point.
Yeah.
Oh, hot.
That 86 Mets team, God, a lot of guys. A lot of great guys, a lot of bad stories.
Well, Doc, Daryl,
Nails. Now Nails.
Man. We discussed this earlier. The Portland Trail Blazers beat the Phoenix Suns 116-83. Cam's very impressed with the front court.
Very impressed.
Too many guards.
Just we need more 6'3 guys.
Jake Layman had a good night.
He did. Jake Layman, a full-size 6'9,
mm-hmm.
as Kevin Calabro says. A legit 6. I don't know what that means.
And a forward.
A legit 6'9. Does that mean that Kevin Durant is a legit 6'9?
Well, no.
It's the same thing. Kevin Durant is 7'1.
That's the... Hey, I know you guys are going to not believe it because he's white. He's 6'9.
He's 6'9. Legit.
You definitely aren't going to believe this. He had 28 points on 10 of 14 shooting. But sad news out of the NBA. Tex Winter, pioneer of the triangle offense, died at 96 years old.
Wow. Talk about a good run.
I saw
Kerry
Agers of the Portland Tribune. You want to go with the Oregon tie on this one?
Okay.
He was a pole vaulter at Oregon State University for 1 year. Met his wife there and then transferred to USC during World War II.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So Tex Winter, dead at 96. Pioneer of the triangle offense.
R.I.P.
Phil Jackson's assistant coach as well.
And that's cool. That's cool.
NFL slate gets underway tonight, Thursday night football.
Who we got?
Now, it seems on the surface it's a good game, but from the worst division in football. The Eagles visit the New York Giants, 2-3 versus 1-4. Who gets up off the mat tonight?
Eagles are in shambles right now. There's a lot of regrets, a lot of frustration, a lot of injuries, a lot of, oh boy, Super Bowl hangover. We're not focused. The Giants, I don't know, dissension, frustration. Saquon Barkley's good. Odell Beckham's good. Eli Manning, bad.
Bad.
Bad. Pat Shurmur, what's going on? I don't know.
Well, they got rid of Eric Flowers, their right tackle that they used a first-round pick on a couple weeks ago. He cleared waivers yesterday. He will be visiting the Jacksonville Jaguars later this week.
It's hot. Damn hot. Real hot.
All right, we discussed this earlier, but it bears repeating. Pete Thamel of Yahoo Sports with quite the unflattering report about Pac-12 officials in the USC-Washington State game. A targeting foul, not the Port Augustine versus Gardner Minshew variety, but a earlier targeting foul in that game was overturned by a third party, which ends up being the Pac-12's general counsel and president of business affairs, Woody Dixon, according to Yahoo Sports, called into the replay booth and overturned a targeting call for no apparent reason.
Yeah, bat phone was used. I think it was the bookies. This is going to get bigger than everybody thinks. I think it was just the tip of the iceberg of an investigation. I think this takes down Larry Scott.
Apparently in this, the replay booth, the officials on the field, and the command center in San Francisco all agreed that the play in question was a targeting penalty. One guy called in, overruled everybody, and they called no targeting. And it was written in the official's report at the end of the game that it was overturned by Woody Dixon. So,
not good.
it is not good at all. Maybe the just tip of the iceberg of what happens with
Larry
Scott,
shows the dysfunction of what the Pac-12 and how its operations are doing right now.
No doubt about that. Hot and Cool on the Fan is brought to you by Area Heating and Cooling. Right now, Area has great discount offers on qualifying equipment from Trane. Start saving today at areaheating.com. Coming up next, let's preview Ducks, Huskies, the weekend in the Pac-12. Yogi Roth of the Pac-12 Network joins us next. Dustin Cam on the Fan. Big weekend in the Pac-12. Both the North and the South may be on the line, as the Washington Huskies, the number 7 team in the country, head down to number 17 Oregon, while unbeaten Colorado heads to USC in a South tilt that could ultimately decide who comes out of the South in the Pac-12 championship game. And to discuss that plus the other action across the conference, he'll be on the call of UCLA Cal with Ted Robinson and Jill Savage, is Yogi Roth of the Pac-12 Networks. Good morning, Yogi. How you doing, man? Yogi?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Oh, there we go.
We're doing well. All right. Yeah. We got a big one this weekend down in Eugene, Autzen Stadium. One thing that we've kind of talked about over the course of the week is you have, you know, one side, and Chris Peterson is saying, you know, we're just going to attack this as a normal week. It is something not a unique game. It's not anything more important, while Mario Cristobal is embracing the rivalry, embracing kind of what Washington and Oregon mean. Is this something that, you know, have gotten to know these two guys pretty well. Is this something that kind of encompasses the personalities of those two coaches? Is one downplaying and one kind of amping this thing up to a point where it can't be controlled anymore?
I don't know. That's a really fun debate. That's a fun discussion. I mean, I've been on both sides. You know, I was just at Pitt in the summer, and you know, they're having all former players to kind of record a video about the Penn State game. And I was like, okay, I get it. You know, and then I came from the tree of Pete Carroll, where like Tuesday practice is probably harder than the UCLA or Notre Dame game, you know, and when we had it going. So I think there's a bunch of right ways to do it. What I think is interesting is that you've got a program in Washington who has played, won, and lost, and kind of pseudo-ly had draws in huge games. Right, if you just look at the Chris Peterson era, and Oregon's trying to get their swag back, you know, and it was almost there. It was there pretty much up until a freaky step on the pylon and a bad snap and a turnover. You look at the Stanford collapse at the end there a couple weeks ago. So I think it's based on your team too a little bit, and as you referenced their personalities, but it is an interesting approach, because I do think that for the opponent coming in, which is obviously Washington, you can't hype it up too much. You know, when you go on the road, and it's kind of fun because, you know, 65 of you, I think, is the travel limit in Pac-12 games, you have to just be about execution, you know. And when you're at home, like, you got a 12th man, you know, and Austin's awesome, as you guys know. So they're going to lean on that to a certain degree. So, you know, I wonder if, you know, the home field was flipped. We'll learn about that next year, what the narrative is around the game. But I think the two programs at different maturities, you know, places within just the, you know, the rebirth of both of them, right? I mean, both teams kind of have gone through that, you know, when UW and Chris Peterson got there, and now what Mario is doing. So it's going to be interesting. You know, it's going to be interesting in the third quarter, late second quarter, mid second quarter, when it's just about execution. And it's going to be a fun one.
So we're talking about quarterbacks, and with Jake Browning and Justin Herbert, I've used this at nauseam for me. I mean, I say it sometimes, everyone gives me a lot of crap about it, but I say win a big game. Which guy does this game mean most to? When I look at Jake Browning and Justin Herbert, they both haven't had that signature big game when, you know, you had a chance when USC went up and beat Jake Browning in 2016, and Herbert goes on the road, beats Cal. But this is one of those moments where, could it be one of those games for either guy to say, all right, this is my coming out party?
Yeah, well, I think for the nation, I mean, I think that's a national, you know, if you don't pay attention to Pac-12 like you guys do or I do, yeah, I mean, I think you're going to probably think that way, and that's fair. I mean, I remember UW beat Stanford, I think it was like 44-6, 2016, and I want to say they were two top 10 teams at the time or something like that. So the thing with Jake is that he's played on big stages, and I don't think we've seen like these choke moments, right? Like, we've seen him try to do too much. One can argue, you know, if you look at the Auburn game on the interception or, you know, the Utah game. I mean, they won that ball game, but, you know, obviously, you know, him trying to make a play when the D-line is all over him isn't, you know, what you want always in the quarterback spot. But I think that's a narrative that gets that's easy, you know, when you don't watch every snap, for instance. And I think these players, I don't think guys feel like I got to win. You know, I think they just think that, you know, they know in a huge game, the guy who touches the ball every time on offense has to play really well. Mm-hmm. You know, I think back, it hit me this year. It was really a simple comment, but it dawned on me. Chris Peterson said it in week two. We were up there, and Jonathan Smith just said it last week at Oregon State, where they said, you know what, everybody feels the loss. And just because I'm the head coach doesn't mean that, like, other guys don't care as much. So whether it's the graduate assistant, the quarterback, the backup left tackle, the scout team, you know, linebackers pretending to be Troy Dye or Ben Burkhoven, like, everybody's in it just as much. It's just some guys get the camera on them all the time. And clearly, I'm talking about the head coach and the quarterback. So, yeah, both guys need to nationally get a win and have your, you know, for Herbert, potentially his Heisman moment, right? Or if Jake goes off, like, there's a world where he gets thrust back in if they, you know, continue to win every game out. And, you know, those things for sure. But I think both of those guys have made critical throws and critical moments, you know, throughout their career. And I don't think that it's been, they've just been a disaster in critical moments. On the other hand, you know, maybe they haven't always won the national games, but I mean, I make that argument about this conference that no one's won one of those big games. To me, that doesn't mean that, you know, Sam Darnold wasn't elite because they couldn't beat Ohio State, you know. So I think it's a fair discussion, but I think both of these guys are gamers and will show up in a big one.
Pac-12 Network's Yogi Roth is our guest. He'll be on the call for UCLA and Cal this weekend.
And so with that said, Yogi, does this conference need this? I mean, we beat this drum. I beat this drum all the time. It's just the SEC comparison and the ACC now with Notre Dame. You know, we're out here, cute little conference. Every time I hear a national recognition, it's like, oh, you know, the Pac-12, look what they're doing. Does the conference need to buoy itself up with games like this and have somebody stand out, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think it's fair. I mean, I think what, you know, for instance, I'm calling UCLA as a reference this week, so I was going back and studied the UW game pretty extensively, where the final score is 31-24, but when you watch the game back, it's really a 31-17 game, and UCLA has an 11-minute drive in the third quarter. And UW, I thought, like, still pretty much, like, I don't want to say dominated, but handled the game. Like, there was never a thought where I was like, they're going to lose the game the whole time. You know, I never felt like, whoa, UCLA is moving it. You know, it wasn't that. But if you do what everybody does, you know, what we may do with other conferences living on the West Coast, generalizing we, you just look at the score. You know, you get the alert. UCLA hanging tough against, you know, UW late in the fourth. I remember I saw that call in our game. And I looked at Ted Robinson. I was like, whoa, what is happening right now? And when you watch the game, it's really not like that, at least in my opinion, evaluating it. So I do think it's a fair point of, yeah, you need this game to be huge, which it is. It's on a grand stage. You know, you're getting ABC, you know, midday type of game. And you need to be a great game, or you need UW or Oregon to handle it, which I don't think is going to happen. I don't think it's going to be 70-21. I think this is going to be a classic game. And like you did in Stanford, Oregon, you know, when a record number of people, you know, watch that game, you just come away with it being like, Justin Herbert's a baller. Like, Mario Cristobal has got it going. You know, KJ Costello, JJ Arcega-Whiteside, and Caden Smith and Colby Parkinson, like, real dudes. You know, NFL caliber players. You need like that, where all of a sudden, you know, people are talking about them in Nashville and Orlando and Tuscaloosa and Lincoln because everybody saw it. You know, we all do that when we see that, you know, that big stage, big type of game. So I think you're right. I think the conference needs a classic battle, and probably even more so, they need the winner to roll, you know, and win out. Because I do think you look at the CFP and, you know, Oregon could win out. They're not conference might kill them if there's another one loss team, you know, in terms of the discussion around a CFP berth, which is unfair or unfortunate. You know, that's why I think the CFP should expand every conference champion. But regardless, you know, you need Colorado to roll this year because people are going to look at their non-con and know, common opponents were, what, 2-16 heading into the game last week. So I think that whoever wins this game, as a conference, you want to root for them the rest of the way. And UW, you know, has the strongest case because of, you know, their non-conference schedule happening week one. And if they can win out, then they've just strung together, you know, obviously an impressive season.
You know, an overarching kind of conference question. We've seen that, you know, football is cyclical. And are you seeing kind of the pendulum swinging in the Pac-12 from finesse to more physicality? And when you look at what Washington has done over the last handful of years, Mario Cristobal's attitude there, what Wilcox is trying to do at Cal, obviously Utah. And that's kind of been the staple of Colorado's resurgence under Mike McIntyre.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think so. I think there's a really cool thing happening in football, you know, and I think Andy Reid, he was talking to one of our coaches at the Elite 11 last summer, and he goes, you know, high school and college are 5 years ahead of the NFL. And if you think back to 5 years ago, and I think that's when Marcus Mariota went to the NFL, that was the vogue, right, in college, like what they were running, obviously. And Chip and the success that Mark Helfrich had when, you know, he took over that program early on, teams were doing that stuff. And people really didn't know how to operate that. I remember even, you know, I spent time obviously with the Seahawks up there with Coach Carroll, and you know, they were doing some cool stuff, like running, you know, the Oregon running game to a certain degree, if you want to be general around it, or changing play calls. You know, the NFL now is now no longer, you know, whatever, the Spider 2 eye banana, every snap is not like that everywhere. You know, they're cutting down verbiage. And I say that because I think the learner has completely changed. And in the NFL, the learner now is the guy that I saw in high school, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago in high school camps, and then balled out in college, and is now, you know, gone through that system. And I say that on the back end of here we go in high school football and now college football. It's gone from wide open spread attacks all over Florida, Texas, California. I mean, that was pretty much, you know, what went on. I can remember 12 years ago, going to a camp, a 7-on-7 camp, being like, whoa, football's changing. And now you're seeing the best athletes playing quarterback who are passers and were trained as passers from fourth grade on. And they're also been trained because of Madden, because of whether you look at Brady's time, you know, whatever it was, Tom versus Time, and all the content that people can gather. You're seeing football players be much more adept at understanding systems. So I think systems are shifting, and I think that the learner has shifted. And I think when kids get into college now, they understand that it can't just be basketball and grass anymore. If you think about it, it's really not that way at a lot of places. There's only a handful of places that even operate like that with people that came up within that system. And to me, that's kind of been the shift. So, yeah, you look at Cal, you look at the Ducks. Clearly, there's a more physical team. Oregon State's going to be that way, coming from the UW approach. Arizona, with Noel Mazzoni, they're going to spread you out, but it's not air raid spread you out. You know, they're still going to run the football. It's based in those principles. Chip Kelly's based in those principles. And Colorado, you know, knows that they need to run it, and the stats back it up. You know, because the last 10 years, who wins this conference are teams that usually handle the ball, you know, and can be physical. So, yeah, I think if there's... Yeah, there's definitely been a transition.
Yogi Roth of the Pac-12 Network, he will be on the call of UCLA and Cal, along with Ted Robinson and our old friend Jill Savage. Tell Jill hi for us. Yogi, thank you for your time, man. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Yogi.
Anytime. Of course, guys. Thank you. Have a good day.
You too. Man, this one is coming down to when you look at Oregon, Washington, it has all the makings of a... This is the North that's on the line, and this is kind of that last ditch. He said last ditch effort to make that kind of promise to the college football playoff that we still have a team that's relevant, right? Got a lot of work to do, though.
A lot, very much so.
All right, Yogi Roth, Pac-12 Network. Coming up next, Hugh Jackson is warning of rat poison. What? Here's Buck with SportsCenter. All right, it is 7:30. Yogi Roth of the Pac-12 Network. You know, you forget how early it is for most people in the world. at 7:15 to get up and do an interview sometimes. If you missed Yogi's interview, check it out on the Les Schwab Tires podcast at 1080thefan.com. Follow-up to a conversation earlier, Jimmy Butler apparently murdered the Minnesota Timberwolves yesterday. A guy who covers the team, John Krasinski, is saying, not John Krasinski from...
Jim from The Office?
The Office. He said the Timberwolves will not practice today. No media availability, of course. Jimmy Butler killed the Timberwolves. He killed them. That was the day the Timberwolves ended.
We just need to take a day off, let it breathe.
Yeah, I guess. I mean,
yeah.
Jimmy Butler, RIP, Minnesota Timberwolves. You see, Hugh Jackson is warning his Cleveland Browns of rat poison.
Mm-hmm.
After picking up their second win of the year, the Cleveland Browns are now firmly in the bandwagon territory. Snoop Dogg came and gave a motivational speech to the team yesterday.
Oh, boy.
Afterwards, he warned the team, hey, we're going to have a lot of bandwagon fans now that were not in last place in the AFC North.
Mm-hmm.
So watch out.
Why is that a watch out?
They're two and one.
Yeah, I know that. But that's a good thing. You want everybody to jump on board the bandwagon. Get on board. Let's go, Cleveland. What are you worried about? It's not like you're the Patriots. We welcome all comers.
Hugh Jackson was just waiting to use the rat poison reference, though. I mean, he didn't use rat poison. He just said, watch out, be weary of the bandwagoners. He's just been watching Nick Saban, and he figures that this is a good time to do it. I mean, it's not going to get much better than 500, which is what you're at right now.
Right.
So just hop on board, enjoy your third place in the AFC North, and maybe you'll see kind of where this thing's at after this week. Who do they have this week? I was watching NFL Live yesterday, and there was a situation where they went through every game remaining, and they said the Cleveland Browns could eventually be, 7-8-1
mm-hmm.
at the end of the year. Do you see this? And 7-8-1 would be on the cusp of, potentially being a playoff team. Obviously, you're not going to make the playoffs unless you win, 9 games or whatever. But they would be close. They got the Chargers this week, and then the Buccaneers and Steelers. Is this a team that could be threatening down the stretch for a playoff berth?
No.
Still too far away?
Yeah. What are we talking? They just were 0-16. Hold the phone. Back the truck up here.
Hey, they're 2-1 over the last 3 weeks.
Ravens are better. The Steelers are better.
They beat the Ravens.
I got that. Ravens are better. Steelers are better.
You are what your record is. They tied the Steelers.
I got you.
Still not buying.
I don't even like talking about the Browns at this point, other than the annoyance of learning that, hey, they're back. We're back. Okay, you got 2 wins. Good. Congratulations. Let's win football games in November and December, and then let me know how a rookie quarterback would lead a team to a division championship in its first season.
All right, so not on the... Hey, you're the guy that Hugh Jackson is not warning his team about. You're not on board with them quite yet.
Not on board yet. Got to earn it a little bit before I crown anything with you.
Do you see Ben Roethlisberger's comments yesterday, though, about speaking in that division, the Steelers being better? He came out yesterday and he's like, hey, so after this week is the week that Le'Veon Bell's supposed to report. They have a bye and then Le'Veon Bell's supposed to be back. And
oh, by the way, did you forget about Cincinnati in that division too?
They're 4-1. Okay. Yeah, no, I did not forget about them.
All right, just checking.
They got the Steelers this week.
They do.
That game's always fun. But Big Ben was saying, even when Le'Veon Bell comes back, James Conner should not lose his role and should not lose his playing time. Do you see that as a green light and just kind of like the public blessing from Ben Roethlisberger to, all right, management, the time has come. If you're going to trade him, just trade Le'Veon Bell before this week.
I wouldn't even speculate, if he does come back, certainly. Do you think that the Pittsburgh Steelers would not welcome him back at this point in time, even in week 8? Of course they would. They want to make the playoffs.
Well, no, I'm talking about, James Conner sitting there, and he's been productive. He's at 342 yards
rushing.
Yeah,
productive, then there's Le'Veon Bell.
Right.
Now, his role would probably, if you're the coaches, you're going to make sure, no matter what, because if Le'Veon does come back, he's not going to be 100% right out of the gate. So you need to have backup plans. Of course, you're going to keep him as healthy as possible. You're not just going to turn him out. Different packages. You're Ben Roethlisberger. You're just making sure somebody's out there.
And how long is it going to be until he probably gets back?
Well, they said the bye week, which is week 8.
Well, no, I know, but until he's back to being, you know, Le'Veon Bell.
Shoot, with the first game out of the gate last year, he missed all training camp, came out and had a record day. I mean, this is just Le'Veon Bell. I couldn't even answer that question for you. Every time we think, oh, guys can't do it, take all that time off, and they'll just come back out and be fresh as a daisy, and he'll have 10 catches and rush for 150.
Which leads to the maybe more running back should take some time off.
Sure.
And not due to the training camp thing. Well, Adrian Peterson.
12 weeks only.
Took the training camp off and then ended up going for 2,000 yards that year after the ACL.
True. We need to stop using him as an example because he's an anomaly. And anomalies don't prove the rule, just like exceptions don't prove the rule, because this year he's still trying to run and he's old.
He had a couple good games. Couple.
He did the same thing last year. One or two good games, and your body cannot hold up. No. Okay. Remember when Herschel Walker said, yeah, I'm 52. I can still come back and run. You would be murdered.
It is a
young man's game at the positions other than quarterback.
I saw Herschel Walker in that MMA fight, though.
Yeah, no, he looks great.
He's a terrifying human being.
Yeah.
Did he ever do more than just one MMA fight? Because I thought he was going to be like a real pro and do that. I think he only had one fight, though.
He's kind of old, isn't he?
He's like 56 years old.
He's really old.
Still in great shape, though.
Yeah, but probably not going to have a long fighting career.
No. Yeah. And Evander Holyfield looks great. I saw him at the Georgia game this past weekend. They did a TV shot. His kid, you know, plays running back at Georgia. Yep. That guy still looks like he could fight.
Deion Sanders' kid just got offered by Florida State.
Yeah, he's good, too. You know, that's good. Jerry Rice's son's really good. Top five. I think he's the number one dual threat. Or the inside quarterback, or I'm sorry, receiver, slot receiver.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that actually kind of, I mean, it's Jerry Rice.
Yeah.
It is Jerry Rice. Where does he go to high school? Is he down like
he's
in
California?
The California Bay Area?
Somewhere, I think.
That's going to be so fun when all these guys start coming up and like we start seeing
Hall of Famers kids.
Yeah. Because that is really your era and the era just like the late 80s, early 90s is when it was like, okay.
Oh, we're now starting to see it. The McCaffrey families are coming through. We're get to see more of it and more of it. It's going to be fun. Wait till we get to see some Manning kids. I don't know how long that's going to be. Ugh. That's my kid's era. Now, I think I think Peyton had families late.
Yeah. They're all pretty young.
Yeah,
maybe like the oldest. It's like
can you imagine having your youngest. Like Peyton Manning as your, he's like, hey, here, we're going to break this down for you here. We can go through this. That'd be awesome.
Well, shoot, they were.
Yeah.
That's my point.
Their dad let them say, hey, why don't you come here and watch this with it? I think that's an advantage.
55305. The better you today text. I know your foe. Bucks got a Ducks Huskies rivalry edition of Know Your Foe next on The Fan. All right, here we go. We do it every Thursday at 7:45. It is time for Know Your Foe. Beavers don't have a foe this week, so they're sitting this one out. We have did we pick a national game that we were going to do? Because we were going to do that last week.
We have bonus questions for the University of Washington. Should we get to them?
Bonus.
Perfect.
Questions.
But Know
and
Your
play
Foe.
Play along with us.
Yeah, 55305. Better you today, text line. We have got Know Your Foe, Washington, Oregon edition. Buck, hit it with us. Hit us with it. My gosh.
Yeah, we'll try to do that. So the first one here, as we all know, those Huskies up there, they're kind of squares up there at the UW campus. So
wait. My foe is Oregon. Why are we starting with Washington?
No.
I'm playing with you, Buck.
Yeah.
I'm trying to know my foe. I already know my foe.
Well, let's see.
Okay, let's see. It's not my foe. This would be my home.
Yeah, this is your bro or something like that.
Know your home.
Yeah, know your home.
Yeah.
Well, on UW's campus in 1929, Matthew Lyle Spencer banned a specific activity that he thought was a little bit too risque. Did he ban A, spooning, B, kissing, or C, intercourse?
Wow, Buck, this is really, really great question.
Wow, I think it is.
Is it?
Yeah.
Spooning?
Yeah, I'm going to go with
1920.
Wait, hold
1929.
On. I'm 29. Assuming that if he banned spooning,
it's
he would
something
ban
public. It's got to be kissing. It's got to be something public. Because he didn't like that. It was
spooning,
a little bit offensive.
Kissing or intercourse?
I'm going to go with kissing.
Yeah, I'm going to go with that too, because that would be the only place that he could see
PDAs, it. PDAs, you always get offended by PDAs.
Yeah.
That is correct. Although the inspiration for banning kissing was that he saw couples spooning in the shadows of the columns one spring evening.
Ooh, the shadows of the columns. Those are vents.
Everything was a little bit more romantic back in 1920.
They were.
UW has been the site of some notable inventions. Which of the following was not invented at the University of Washington? Is it A, bubblegum, B, color television, or C, the compact disc? Two of those three were invented at Washington. One was not.
Well, I don't believe bubblegum was invented at Washington.
I'm going to go compact disc.
Dusty and Cameron. No. So bubblegum and the color tube TV, both invented at the University of Washington.
Those are two phenomenal. Those are
CDs.
Those are, well, I was about to say the color tube television has
color tube
lasted the test of time, but it has not. We are now on to CDs. Plasma. But CDs.
I still remember my first CD.
What was it?
Still have it.
What was
it? AC/DC, The Razor's Edge.
That fits.
Mm-hmm.
Mine was MC Hammer, You Can't Touch This.
Ooh, that's a good one, too.
Mine was... I forgot.
Oh, you forgot?
Oh, it may have been Bone Thugs and Harmony.
Oh,
Crossroads right. album.
Yeah. Good one. Moving on. We have, let's see, oh, nicknames. They have not always been the Huskies at the University of Washington.
This is hilarious. Hold on. Never chewing bubblegum again. Duck fans coming in hot.
Here's a way to protest. Show the Wrigley family out in Chicago.
Right, we'll show you, juicy fruit.
So before Washington were the Huskies, there was another name that was proposed for this team that was met with widespread protest. What proposed team name was never adopted by the University of Washington in 1921? Was it A, the Lumberjacks, B, the Vikings, or C, the Indians?
Widespread protest. I am kind of glad that they settled on the Huskies. That's better than all three of these.
I'm so glad we have to go back to the 20s to get anything that's interesting on our program.
Well, I can't make it easy for you, big dog.
Why has that got to be easy? Let's see.
I know which one I'm going with.
I want to say it's as blatant as the Indians here.
I'm going Lumberjacks.
Yeah.
I'm going Lumberjacks.
No, because, you know, Stanford had that, and then Stanford was removed, and they had the tree because they were the, it was their controversial. Yeah.
I'm going Lumberjacks.
Indians.
Both?
It was the Vikings. I don't know why it was met with protest, but it says here that they were, and this is interesting, before they were, it was proposed they'd become the Vikings, they were known as the Sun Dodgers until 1919.
Yeah, if you would have said Sun Dodgers, I knew exactly what that was, yeah.
So the Sun Dodgers until 1919, and then it said that it was met with protest from students and a joint committee of students, coaches, faculty, alumni, and businessmen who did not want the Vikings to be the new team name.
Sun Dodgers is phenomenal.
It was the name of the dogs for years. The dogs that the big husky dog, the Malamute, Alaskan Malamute. It's not even true husky. It's a Malamute.
Really?
There's a good trivia. Yeah.
Sun Dodgers, a great one, just because of the Pacific Northwest. Mm-hmm.
Sun Dodger was the dog when I was playing.
Oh, the name of the dog.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah.
What is it named now?
Dubs.
Oh, yeah.
Dubs 1, Dubs 2, Dubs 37.
Millennial dogs.
I think it's dogs.
Millennial dogs.
True.
So we have a little bit of time for a bonus question or two. We know that a number of tight ends, including our very own Cameron Cleland, came out of the University of Washington. He was not the highest drafted tight end overall, though, to come out of the university. Did that distinction go to A, Austin Seferian Jenkins, B, Jeremy Stevens, or C, Mark Bruner?
Man, those are three really good college tight ends. I'm going to go ASJ.
Well, ASJ, I mean, Mark was drafted to the Steelers, and Mark was, he was somewhere around, was he 21st? Somewhere in there, because he was the 95 draft, and ASJ was a little bit higher. I think it is ASJ. Yeah, it was Brew at 20, wasn't it?
Mark Bruner, 27th overall. Okay. Jeremy Stevens, 28th overall. Okay. ASJ 30th
right.
Second.
All right, 30th. All right, he was just outside.
Why did I think like Austin Seferian Jenkins was like a top 15 pick? Like I thought he was like 15th.
I got a trivia for you, and I'm just going to bounce it off you
Let's
guys.
Let's go.
Ooh. Okay. In 1998, there were five Husky tight ends starting for their five NFL teams. Can you name all five Husky tight ends that were starting in 1998?
No.
No.
You. Ernie Conwell.
Correct. And which team?
Oh, no chance. I'm not. I know you.
St. Louis Rams.
Guys.
Me, the Saints. We already know. I just gave you the other one.
Conwell. Oh,
Mark Bruner.
Oh, Bruner.
Steelers.
And then Conwell's with the Rams. I don't know who the other two are.
I don't know who the other two are.
Eric Bjornsson started for the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, really?
And my college teammate, but he was most time the backup, Jeremy Brigham started for the Oakland Raiders. Oh, so during that week, five of us all were starting.
Now that is
a that's really cool.
That's a pretty cool thing, right? Trivia right there. Yes, and this is a good one. The Seattle hockey team needs to be the Sun Dodgers.
Wouldn't that be cool?
The new NHL
Wouldn't
team.
That'd be cool.
It fits for a team that plays on ice.
You're dodging the sun.
All right, 55305. The better you today text line. We go from Know Your Foe to the Pro Football Challenge brought to you by Encore Audio Video. We got five games. You can play along at 1080thefan.com. Straight up winners. $2,500 home theater system upgrade on the line in the Pro Football Challenge at 1080thefan.com. That is next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.